Mr. Cutlets, Mr. Cutlets, when you swing around that pork chop, I get a whiff of heaven every time you pass my doorstop. With the chicken and the brisket and the marrow and the giblets, Mr. Cutlets, spend some time with me. I know it's crazy, but it's true. It's not worth eating if it lacks the grease.
Hi, I'm Josh Ozersky, the Mr. Cutlets in question. I'm here at Roberta's on the Heritage Radio Network, and I'm joined by my beautiful co-host, Stephanie Cohen.
Hello.
The newspaper reporter.
That's right.
And we also have a very special guest today, Steffi.
Who's that?
The one and only Kim Severson of the New York Times.
Hello.
Now, we're becoming very Times Ian here. We had Oliver Schwerner Albright here 2 weeks ago.
He goes by another name now.
Oh, that's right.
Oliver Strand.
Right, like Shakira.
Yeah, it's going to be O pretty soon, I think.
You know, I should also say, Kim, that our show here at the wonderful bastion of Calzone in Bushwick is sponsored by the Hearst Ranch in the West Coast somewhere. That is where Citizen Kane lives, and they have an animals that they sell, and they also sponsor us here. They work very closely with Heritage Foods USA, Patrick Martin's organization, I'm sure you know well.
Right, sure.
And we like, I don't actually, you know, eat that meat myself often, but I approve of it.
So Hearst Ranch beef is approved by Mr. Cutlets.
It's approved for medicinal purposes.
I see. I have to say this. I love coming to Roberta's, and I was here for a rabbit killing seminar last weekend, a couple weekends ago.
Is Elmer Fudd here?
Rabbit killing
seminar. Did Elmer Fudd teach it?
You know, it's like,
kill the rabbit.
Right. It's very unsuccessful. Big bald guy running around with a carrot. It was kind of weird, but it really was. It was fun, and there were some of my girlies from the West Coast, from San Francisco area, Novella Carpenter and Samin Norsat, who came and showed us how to kill rabbits and talked about growing them. So I like Roberta's and the pizza, which I see three beautiful slices sitting here.
Oh my God, you're killing me.
I'm looking forward to eating.
Do you know that I can't eat that?
Well,
Steffi,
do you know
that I'm on a diet? I'm on a juice and shakes diet now?
I've only heard complaints about it for the past 7 days. How many days in are you that you have not eaten
today,
solid food?
Today is actually the 10th day.
No, you seriously have not eaten solid food for 10 days?
No. Here's how
it works.
Because
you look great, honey. You just look super.
I know.
Me and Tommy Lasorda. You have the shakes for two meals on the regular days. So like but it's unnatural. Like, you're supposed to have like a shake and then like some kind of skinless chicken sandwich for lunch. And instead, like, I would have like a shake and then like April Bloomfield's like deep fried lamb ribs or something.
Yeah, I think that counts, right?
That's on the diet.
And then there's also juice days where you don't have anything, and that's just like you're in Judy Garland mode.
Does that just make you entirely grumpalicious and no fun to be around?
You know what's weird?
It gets you high. Don't you sort of get like a little bit?
Have you seen Jesus?
Yeah.
No. There was a yogi that turned green. I remember I read in when I used to be a fan of Vedic graphic novels. There was one about a yogi that turned green and flew away because he ate so little. But this
welcome to obscure world.
Yeah,
but let's
have
keep
you
going.
Have you hit transcendence yet?
I'll never.
Should we follow you?
Never,
but seriously, does it change your mood? I'm curious. Like, you know,
I'm not hungry. I haven't been hungry at any time.
Really?
Even looking at this beautiful pizza.
I feel like there was a Christina Hendricks sitting there in a cocktail dress, I would feel the same sort of objective lust, but I wouldn't actually feel physical yearning for her, if you understand.
So the shakes actually fill you up. It's just that you're still
right. I'm
so
just
intellectually,
you're
fantasizing about food.
Uh-huh. That's what it is.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. And you're doing this just to get yourself kind of to fight and weight and to kind of clean the pipes a little? Or
the
what?
Pipes, I think they're going to have to be,
it's too late
more
for
than
that.
This. But
too late for that.
I am fat. I'm fatter than I should be. And I got a foxy live-in girlfriend now.
She's foxy.
Zero.
On my professional opinion,
that's
she's quite
part
foxy.
Of it.
She's a foxy long-time mm-hmm. companion. Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to go on TV soon, God willing. Both Ozersky.tv, which is my new show, and then also I'm in negotiations with a well-known cable network.
Really?
Yes.
CNN? Are you going to be like you and Anderson Cooper? Is that...
Well, that's
going to be the new straight white
life.
Male Rachel Maddow. It'll be great.
Now, Kim,
you can't tell us more about that, really?
Well, okay, I can.
I mean,
tell
come
you.
On.
I don't know if I'm.
We're just friends. We're just sitting here, and
No, you can't.
I really
well,
can't.
Come on.
Yeah.
Isn't it bad luck or something?
It not
aren't
only
you, aren't
might
you
be,
a newspaper
it might clear
reporter?
The deal.
But I already know.
Oh well, see that's
see,
no fun.
And I don't want the.
Oh, you don't want us to
scoop
you
out of the bag. Yeah.
Anyway. You don't want the New York Times to scoop you once again, right?
No.
What do you mean once again?
Whoa.
I'm kidding. She works for the Post. She kicks our butt.
Oh, her based. You were talking to. Oh, well, that's okay.
you can
Kim,
insult
you,
me.
You are, your career, before you came, let's, for those of our listeners that don't know the contours of your career, you arrived upon the scene here in Gotham about, 4 years ago?
Yeah, it actually would be 5 this month, shockingly.
And before that, you were a well-known food writer in the Bay Area.
Right, and I was in San Francisco. I was working for the San Francisco Chronicle for about 7 years.
So that's a good stretch.
So can I jump in here?
Yeah, all right.
What's the deal with this food fight, this transnational food fight?
The New York-San Francisco
New York versus San
food battle.
Can you explain that to us?
I don't know if I can explain it to you, but it is funny, especially, Nate... Nate Appleman came over and it was like, oh my God, they're from A16, a restaurant in San Francisco, and he's coming to New York, and this is all, and it was like, there's like some big like game of Red Rover going on that I don't quite understand, but there's this sense that, I think San Francisco chefs sometimes feel like they don't get the respect they deserve. And, mm-hmm. Certainly, New York, I found, really does believe it's the center of the culinary universe.
It is.
And in some ways,
that's
it
why.
Is. Listen,
well, the reason
it's definitely a thing going on here. That's intense. It's different kinds of food, though. But
yeah.
You really get, even in my, my office, I moved here, and people are like, listen, we just want you to know, when I'm at like the dining section of the Times, olive oil, it doesn't count as a sauce in New York. Okay, so there's this whole
that's
like
a dig right
thing,
there.
It's that
snap.
That idea. But the product in San Francisco is so great, you don't have to do a lot to it. And there's the whole thing about, I can't just put a fig on a plate and call it cookie.
Well,
that's
okay,
bullshit.
So what that is for those of you, this discourse presupposes an extensive knowledge about the cultural warfare between the things. What happened was, what Kim's talking about the fig is, David Chang gave one of his freewheeling interviews, because he's frequently invited to opine,
And he's freewheeling.
And he's very freewheeling. And so he said that the chefs in San Francisco are a bunch of jerks that just give you a plate with a fig on it.
I like that he said that. That's funny.
And that of course, is itself an
wrong,
allusion
but it's
to
funny.
What's her name that puts a peach on
Alice
a plate
Waters.
At the
mm-hmm.
Chez Panisse.
Okay.
But this is true. I think what Kim said, they like, it's like the difference between French and Italian food.
Is that right?
Because French food, they didn't have good stuff as much.
So they had to
develop
the sauces.
Better the arts of gastronomy. Whereas in Italy, they had all the wonderful things growing.
But that's not as
corner.
Complex of a cuisine. No one would argue that it is, right?
Well, I don't know if no one would argue.
Well, and then you also have to say, well, then is a complex cuisine the better cuisine? Or is, the technique that it takes to
but
really
fresh...
coax the excellence out of... the pork, the most porkiness out of a single piece of pork, and understand, the seasonality of things and how they go. I mean, maybe harder to make food, to really be have outstanding food without so much technique. There, you could make that argument too.
This is a deep question,
deep.
Stephanie and Kim, and I think it's one we should take up after the commercial break on the Mr. Cutlets Show.
dance around. Gone are the days when the lady said please, Jelly Jack Jones, won't you come to me? Brown-eyed women and red grenadine, the bottle was dusty but the liquor was clean. Sound of the thunder with the rain pouring down, and it looks like dregs of the whiskey jar. 1930, when the wall caved in, he paid his way selling red-eyed gin.
Well, welcome back to the Mr. Cutlets Show. I'm Josh Ozersky, and we're here at Roberta's Italian restaurant in beautiful Bushwick, New York. Now, Kim Severson from the New York Times.
I got to correct you, though. It's Severson, but that I should have done that before the show. You know, it goes both ways, but you know, I'm just, in case my mom's listening, she'd prefer
well,
my name to be right.
Can we also have Kim Severson here?
Thank you, both of us.
And Kim put in her years at the San Francisco Chronicle, where she was a one of the nation's leading food writers before she was summoned up to the big leagues. Here in
Ow.
New York City.
Another one. Another dig.
Now,
got
Kim,
my pinstripe.
Kim was
but
making...
it does feel a little, I mean, you know. It's
well,
a,
it's the Times.
It's
not
market.
New York. It's yeah. The Times is yeah. Still a singular yeah. Entity. But Kim was saying, and this is something we talk about a lot here, Steffi, that the art of letting a food be itself, you know, it's funny
that's
because...
That's not cooking, though.
No, well, here's
Sorry.
The thing.
Actually, it can be, though.
That's farming.
Well,
that's the farmer.
Well, that's a...
that's not the chef.
Yes, but what's... First of all, it's not true, but more importantly, it hangs heavy upon the consciences of New York chefs.
But they don't have great produce.
No, the product here is just...
No, I don't know if you can.
Is it okay if I...
I don't know.
Can I... Is it all right?
Kim, is it okay?
New York,
boy, look at the time. Oh, wow.
So the New York chefs all subscribe very, very visibly and very almost militaristically mm-hmm. to a credo of, quote, letting food be itself. Every single one of them, in the same way that they always claim that seasonality and local produce is the watchword of their restaurant, every single one of them will tell you that they just want to get out of the way and let food be itself. But it's not that easy. Even the ones that try to do it starkly fail, and the ones that are very frank about not trying to do it, who you can count on the fingers of one maimed hand, like, you know, they don't do it either. So
who doesn't? The San Francisco guys can do it. Is that what you're saying?
I think that I don't know enough about San Francisco. I haven't eaten out there enough.
Well, you know, I think that a lot of it is what diners expect to. So I think
well,
if
what
you
is it like?
Live
what
in San Francisco, what is it like in the mystical land?
Yeah, like what do they give you?
There are unicorn figs.
There are rivers of strawberry marmalade. you know, I think the... The thing that I really observe about the difference between eating in these two cities is at the very high end, New York obviously has the stuff going on. So if you want really kitchen technique and you get the whole kind of swirl and the feel of eating in New York. And I think that New York does a really great job at that. And also I think at the lowest end in New York, I mean, you know, you can get a Jamaican meat patty at 2 a.m. I think that's a very good thing, you know, that just doesn't happen in San Francisco. But I think the middle range, and I've spent a lot more money on mediocre food in New York than I ever did in San Francisco. So
that's
your average salad you get at, you know, wherever, it's like in New York, it feels like it all comes from some big, huge
Cisco
tub somewhere in the Bronx. That's
yeah.
All that same mescaline mix. It's like,
right.
You know, with some crappy dressing. And it's like, what, really? This is... But in California, in San Francisco, you know, the little gem lettuces, you'll get some variation. Even the little corner
even at
restaurant,
like a regular
the
restaurant,
mission, you know, you're going to get some interesting food. So that mid-level, like the kind of food I want to eat on an everyday basis when I go out, it's much easier to find in San Francisco. It's much more difficult to find here.
I think the reason for that, I'm going to take a guess historically, is that, you know, the big thing in food is that imitations are second rate. That particular kind of cooking came out of that area, and it's imitated here by middlebrow yuppie restaurants catering to, you know, like weight conscious, you know, lady executives or something. And it's just it's not first 62. It's like if in if in San Francisco, well, it's like if in San Francisco they tried to do like New York style
pizza.
Well, actually, they're very
hot dogs.
They're, or a corned beef sandwiches.
Right,
whatever.
Right. It just doesn't go. But it's the California thing. I mean, out there, lifestyle there, and it's a preference, not a lifestyle. No, it's the lifestyle out there, I think, is very, you know, you're grilling a lot more. The way you cook is different. You've got more space to cook. You've got things growing. And the seasonality shifts. Like every 2 or 3 weeks, there's something new in season. There's two artichoke seasons that are really distinct, you know.
And but I still would say so that's the climate winning then. That's not necessarily the
but
chefs.
But it does reflect how people cook, and it reflects how you eat, because you sort of eat in the place that you are. You know, where you live, I think how you eat and how you cook is really a reflection of where you live. So you're grilling more. You know, you've got stuff that you can put out on the, and I'm not talking about barbecue, but I'm talking about like fast, quick grilling, things that don't take a lot of cooking. You know, you've got a greater variety of vegetables that show up on your plate and are really good as they are here. It's tough to get really great vegetables that you just want to sort of put on the plate or grill or do whatever you want to do to. So people have a certain expectation of how they eat. They spend a lot more time outdoors in California. You know, love New York. I felt petite when I moved to New York. It made me very happy. And I'm kind of a big gal, you know. So I was like, all right, New York, man, love this. Big old sandwich. It's good. So, you know, it's a different thing. And I think the cooking style really reflects it. But you've also got like, 10,000 restaurants in New York and 3,000 in California and San Francisco, something like that. So we've got a really different push-pull kind of game going on.
And you think diners here would go and get that proverbial fig on the plate and just be disgusted and be okay with it?
I think, you know, the very first time I ate at Chez Panisse, I will tell you, I was a little disappointed, and I had big expectations about it, you know, but I didn't understand a lot of what they were doing. I hadn't tasted enough, you know, shelling beans and pork, and my palate wasn't developed enough to understand why certain things were a perfect expression of what they were. Like, you know, like those figs were really pretty awesome, or that like really a perfect great peach was an amazing thing to eat. Argue whether it's cooking or not.
So she would actually serve a fig just on a plate?
Well, not exactly. You know, at the end of a dinner there, you might get these, they have these black sphinx dates that are really great, and some really perfect Ojai clementines, and they'll put them in a bowl, and that'll be part
that's
of
sweet.
Your dessert thing. And it's really delicious, but it's pretty simple.
I know, but if it
comes with another dessert that they've actually prepared.
And then they also have beautiful apple tarts and all kinds of other things that they cook, of course. So, you know, but then the more I understood and learned and tasted more, then that food, I understood it better and it tasted better to me. And it's the same thing in New York. You know, once you understand the technique, you know, if you do a piece of fish with the sauce, you're kind of like, it's kind of good sauce and it's kind of good fish. But once you understand, you know, where that fish came from, what it took to make that sauce, why it was, when you've tasted a bunch of sauces on a bunch of kinds of fish, you get a little more educated and you understand it. So I think the cross-pollination takes a little time, you know. So I don't think that New Yorkers who are transplanted there would automatically hate it. But, you know, New York, they like, there's this whole, like, sharp elbows, who's better than, you know. Yeah. California, they kind of pretend like they don't want to have any competition, although it's crap, but that's what they pretend.
Well, this is a subject, Stephanie, that I think we still haven't exhausted. You know, Denise worked at Millennium for a long time. This is my girlfriend,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Millennium is a leading vegetarian restaurant.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So let's talk about this whole Biggie two-pack, you know, food
that's
thing.
Right. The East-West, mm-hmm. Man, we're late, you know.
And when we get back from our break on the Mr. Cutlets Show.
Of a fire, doing whatever I had to do to survive. I'm not saying what I did was all right. Trying to break out of the ghetto was a day-to-day fight.
Been down so long, yet nothing crossed my mind. But I knew there was a better way of life, and I was just trying to find. You don't know what you do till you put under pressure. Cross 110th Street is a hell of a tester. Across 110th Street.
Hi, I'm Josh Ozersky. We're back here at the Mr. Cutlet Show, sponsored by the Hearst Ranch on the Heritage Radio Network. Now, Kim Severson was just here, and she's still here.
I am.
And she was saying about San Francisco and the way that they approach food in a sort of a more minimalistic way that is, in fact, deceptively simple, because it's the result of an kind of a more highly developed Shinto-like philosophy about, based on having all these good vegetables, whereas here in New York, you have like a carrot from Seatown.
But do you really want to have to read a freaking, you know, treatise before you enjoy your meal? Like, if you,
Stephanie,
if you
your line of questioning is very hostile.
I did not realize I was going to be treated as a hostile witness,
like,
on this
HUAC.
Show.
This is like HUAC hearings.
What's HUAC?
I know. It's like, God, I feel like those people have snuck into the.
I'm curious. Do you really want to have to be educated before you can enjoy?
But shouldn't you be educated about the food you eat anywhere? Don't you find that you, if you understand a little bit about that chef or the restaurant or what the food is, you know, that you enjoy it more, no matter whether it's where this piece of beef came from or where the chef's history
was? Well, you know, this is interesting. What this suggests to me,
and maybe not, I don't know.
What this suggests to me, guys, is Marshall McLuhan's distinction between hot and cool media. Stephanie, are you familiar with
that? Could you explain Marshall McLuhan's distinction?
Well, it was entirely not true, of course, like many of the things that McLuhan said, but it was a, like many of his, you know, kind of more gnomic utterances, provocative. He said that hot media was ones that there wasn't enough information, like radio, so you had to fill it in, and that got you worked up. And then cool media that really gave you a ton of information, like television, put you in a sort of like a passive, receptive state.
Okay.
Now, I don't know if this is true, but a food like Kim is talking about, where you know you're bringing so much. It's like when you go to the art gallery and there's a cube of burnished steel on the ground, and it's totally empty and inert aesthetically as an object, but then there's like this like 4,000 word thing that says about, like, you know, this makes you rethink your attitudes. It makes us question our attitudes towards time and space or whatever. In that sense, I'm picking up your hostile thing.
But
I'm mocking
you,
it too.
I will tell you that whole thing.
It's
is
hard
that
not to mock.
If you are good at what you do, and you're able to take a guest into a restaurant, and you're able to say, "We're going to serve you this, and this is why it's special," and it doesn't get in the way of your experience, so it's not, again, that chef imposing his
right
or her crap on you, then you know a little bit about the food. You can enjoy it, but you don't have to feel like you're going to school to learn anything. You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that there's a real art to that too. I think we're a little past the phase where now in San Francisco it's very uncool to put where the stuff came from.
They've oh, really?
Kind of like become this kind of
oh.
the whole, you know, like, and it's Johnny's. You know, maybe they'll just have a reference on the menu, like, you know Priscilla's apples or whatever, but it won't say this is sourced here. Here I've seen menus where you have to turn it over, mm-hmm. and then there's the whole list of all the people who gardened it and whatever. Like,
right.
I'm not gonna,
because you know
why?
I'll tell you exactly
apple.
Why. It's a perfect example, because this is second rate. They're imitating something else, mm-hmm. so all the tropes and cliches,
right?
Like, for example, the Spaniards did those foams and whatever like 10 years ago, 15 mm-hmm. years ago, and to this day you're getting like the hacks in Boston or Cincinnati or something, or like dizzying the eyes of overawed locals with right. with that, you know, that technique. But right. you know, the thing about the food is everybody, I think, at this point is trying to use less process, have less overly painterly platings. Is getting away from, there's very few guys that are kind of holding the banner for that kind of food.
But there's also this incredible dive into technique, but technique that doesn't, like, isn't, you know, bells and whistles. I mean, you know, say what you will about sous vide, but that technique, and the, you know, there's a lot of like really smart kitchen technique that's happening. A lot of good technicians, but the integrity of the food's remaining. So that's what's kind of cool.
Yeah,
about
well, that's
it,
invisible.
You know?
That is beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's something that I, you know, that I'm Kim, a huge devotee of Michael White. Michael White is my favorite chef.
Really? I learn so much about you every time we get together.
I know. It's almost like dating.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, Michael White, I think one of the reasons that he has become such a great chef and so successful is that he really does get Italian cooking in his bones, even though, interestingly, he's not Italian. But he also has the exposure to French technique and modern restaurant cookery. So, for example, like he'll for like the pork fusilli, he'll take perfect tomato sauce with a perfect amount of acid and everything, but then he'll emulsify some pork fat back into it. Mm-hmm. It's like sous vide. It's an invisible technique that's just bringing you more of the same but better.
Right, exactly. I think that's kind of the beauty of what's happening in New York at some edge. And then in San Francisco, the guys who are doing that are kind of considered these, they're thumbing their nose at Alice Waters, and they're like the new, you know, we can be complex in San Francisco. And it really comes from this place of insecurity, you know, where in New York, it's like, you know, what next thing can we do to be creative? You know, New York's just so fast and quick, and each chef pushes another, and they really, you know, kind of thoughtful about it. And I think there's some rules, you know, there's some culinary canon that's highly respected in New York, you know, whether it was from the old French culinary canon days or, you know, there's a certain hierarchy, there's a certain standard in the kitchen. And in California, it's so much more of a, we're going to kind of make it up as we go, which was so great. That's why California cuisine could rise up and be something totally different. But, you know, so you're trying to impose this culture of rule and of canon onto a fairly free-willing sort of culinary experience in San Francisco. And it doesn't always translate well in the same way that it doesn't, the listing of where all the food came from right. feels sort of insincere in New York. Right.
I think, though, that is a function of restaurateur. Like restaurateurs and guys who sink a lot of money into a restaurant want to have a lot of control and impose things systematically. But the restaurants a lot of restaurants are driven by young chefs now. And so it's more freewheeling. This is a good example of a restaurant in New York, and I think there are more of them, many more than there used to be, that...
What, Roberta's?
Roberta's, yeah, mm-hmm. where the guys are like serious cooks by any standard.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they pretty much do whatever they feel like whenever they feel like it. You know, but that's kind of a...
So you're saying this would be a real common kind of restaurant in San Francisco. Yeah, like you would spend money, you would get lunch here. So you would spend the bulk of your...
Of them. Yeah. But here it's like a special thing in New York. It's
right.
very special.
You don't get this.
Right. right.
But these guys are grounded in good culinary technique. There's some stuff that's coming up now in Brooklyn where these guys don't know what the heck they're doing. Or these people are. And it's like, come on, are you going to cut that meat? What are you doing that piece of meat? And what do you... Like, who do you think you are? Like... You know, your chocolate's grainy. This is, you know, I mean, there's just some basic technique that people need to know in the kitchen. There's some basic culinary instruction. You know, in order to experiment like that, I think you've got to have been to culinary boot camp, you know, you have to have done it.
But are the cooks in San Francisco, have they been to the culinary boot camp?
Oh, I, you know, certainly, like Daniel Hum and some of those people who come out certainly have, but I think maybe that's not a fair comparison to say that like one place has trained chefs more than another. I just think that if you're going to freestyle out, you have to pretty much, I think you need to have some good technique to base
Are your favorite, some of your favorite places that are sort
of... that's an excellent question.
In San Francisco?
Stephanie.
No, well, or I would New be York. More curious about here because...
Yeah, New York.
That you maybe would be like the places everyone doesn't know.
Well, I don't know if everybody doesn't. I mean, people, you know...
No, I'm curious as just what they
know?
Are.
Like, whether, I mean, I, you know, not. I go... because when I'm feeling lonely for California, I go to Franny's. I live in that neighborhood. So, you know, that's, you know, I mean, this is not, you know, rocket science. I tell you one of my very... And this is also, these are not, you know, new things, but... you know, if I want to spend some money and eat some fish, I go eat David Pasternak's fish at Esca. I mean, I just think he's just,
cook.
I just am always, always, always happy. Plus they have this Meyer lemon Italian meringue cake. That's just,
that sounds good.
Good.
I would like to
good.
Eat that.
I would like to eat that
delicious cake. You would both like to eat that.
We would both like
so
to eat
good.
That.
you know, but I do, you know, and I cook a lot. So, you know, a lot of what I, cause I just get tired, like on that takeout night, like that. I cannot order more mediocre Thai food or Chinese food. It's just going to kill me, you know? So
you would cook instead.
You know, I tend to cook more, but I, you know, I had this yesterday, went out to the, to a place in, on 18th Avenue in Brooklyn called the Hand Pull Noodle and Dumpling House.
Oh,
it was right
yeah.
next to Queen Anne.
Uh-huh. Good name.
Ravioli.
Just what it is.
And it was the most delicious, you know, bowl of noodles.
Well, they have, there's many, I know for a fact.
So like there are tons of those.
Well, there's many Chinamen live in San Francisco too.
Well, Chinamen. We call them Chinamen now? Is that
I'm
our
sorry.
New? We're
well,
back
this
to
wasn't
that?
A guy that's building a railroad, Walter.
inscrutable Chinamen.
I'm very sad to say, I find this a very interesting, appetizing topic.
Everything's appetizing to you right now.
I wish I was eating. But unfortunately,
when do you get to eat again? Just tell me that. When
I'm breaking the fast Tuesday. I'm going to Minetta Tavern. Riyadh told me that he's not eating steak during my diet. Wow. He's not going to eat steak until I break it.
I have a question. How has your diet affected the economy of New York's dining? How much money has
everyone's
not
in
been
the,
spent?
In the red now.
Great.
All right, listen, this is the end of the show. We're going about to do another one. And tune in every week on the Mr. Cutlets Show.
Thanks a lot.
Mr. Cutlets, when you swing around that pork chop, I get a whiff of heaven every time you pass my doorstop. With the chicken and the brisket and the marrow and the giblets, Mr. Cutlets, spend some time with...